Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show.
Making less room for you.
Now only God can hold me.
Hug me, love me, judge me. The only man that hovers above me. Holla.
I met so many men and it's like they're all the same. My appetite for loving is now my hunger pain.
What the heck are we playing?
Feeling sexy. Who's gonna call?
Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. What in the world?
Well, believe it or not, this was the number one song 20 years ago.
And that was In My Foot.
Hey, all right. Way to go. Maybe it was keeping your foot together.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, this is a Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, good morning, everybody.
Glad we're branching out.
Is that what it is?
Something new.
Yeah. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome in. And, of course, happy Saturday to all of you. Yep, it's Steve and I together again. And this is your Weekly Dose podcast.
Well, thank you for joining us today as we are streaming live to you from Orange County, California. Now, if you're new to Your Weekly Dose, this program is about having fun and laughing.
That's right, laughing at the things that we experience in everyday life. The embarrassments, the silly things, the awkward things, the fun things, and even the naughty things.
You know, the things that connect us all. The things that make us human. And as they say, laughter is the best medicine.
And to our listeners, old and new, we always love it when you guys are a part of the show. So join in the conversation. You can do that several ways. Comment on our website, yourweeklydose.com.
Send us a message via Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1.
Say hello to us on Facebook at yourweeklydose.
Or if you want, you want to send us a personal message, you can mail us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
Exactly. Well, of course, today we all know what today is. And we're not going to ignore that. So we are going to remember where we were 20 years ago. So this is our 9/11 20th anniversary show. And but we're going to do a little bit of ha-has and laughter towards the end of the show, too, and kind of fuck it up a little bit as well. But we definitely want to honor those who we lost 20 years ago.
Now, you can always download past shows for free from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you are on the go, you can subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Just search for Your Weekly Dose, and most importantly, tell the world what you think of us. So please rate and review the show.
Yeah, just don't rate and review this song, because, God, this is a horrible song. How did this make it to number one from J-Lo? I have no idea what the heck was going on. But anyway, remember, guys, that any time that we play any songs here on the show, you can always download them by going to our sponsor, which is simply Amazon. All you have to do is go to our website, click on the Amazon banner, bookmark, and then shop to your heart's delight, whatever it is. You know, you need to get new clothes, you need to get new underwear, a new dog, something for your dog. Mainly, get new music, because I'm glad this is 20 years old already. And I don't know what the hell it is. So, but yeah, anyway, just go on our website and click away. I'm just going to stop the song, because that's just horrible.
It's somebody owed J-Lo a favor.
It was featuring this guy named Loud Drool.
What did you say?
Yeah, something like that. Loud Drool, whatever. And I kind of vaguely remember him or whatever. But, you know, I think for today, though, this song is going to be more our style. What do you think?
That's a lot better.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, exactly.
Children, that was our fathers, that was each other.
Well, this song is actually by Bon Jovi, who's a New Yorker guy himself. Mm-hmm. Of course, greatly affected what happened 20 years ago.
Right.
And this song is called Undivided, which was basically dedicated to that day. So that's what this song is about. So definitely check it out. Much better song, I think.
a little more appropriate for what we're...
Yeah, exactly. So, anyway, it's been a little bit of a long week, though. And we know we got to catch up on something. So let's go ahead and do that and catch up.
Oh, yeah. Bum, ba-dum, bum.
Now, before we start catch up, though, we must say, though, that if you guys do enjoy the show, remember to tell a friend about us, because we can't grow without you. So spread the word about the show to your friends. And who knows? Maybe we'll like them better than you. You never know.
Yeah. It could be a win-win.
So, exactly.
Or a win.
Or just, yeah. Hopefully it's just a win.
Yeah.
We like a win-win.
Well, yeah. But,
you know, if it's a win-win-win, that means you're bringing your friends. Exactly. All right. Well, how was your week, bud?
Oh, it was kind of exciting, I guess. It was, let's see. This is the first weekend for NFL.
I was going to say, football started.
So, yeah, one of the things I did while I was in Utah is we had our fantasy football draft, and everybody gets together to pick their teams, and I was unable to be there because I was in Utah, so I was on the phone, on speakerphone, during the draft. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it, but, you know, sitting there listening to 11 other guys just get drunk more and more as the hours go. It takes about 3-4 hours to get the whole thing done. But, oh, my God, it was so funny. There came a point where Mike, who was helping me, I couldn't even tell what he was saying half the time. I stopped keeping track of who'd been picked because I was like, I couldn't tell. They were just too drunk to really let me know what was going on. So, but the last few picks, I kind of knew what I was going to do anyway, and it wasn't anything they were going to do, so I didn't worry
too
much.
So did you get everybody that you wanted, though?
Oh, more or less. I think there was only one time where I was getting ready to pick somebody and somebody picked it. Other than that, everybody I chose was like, okay, this is who I want right now. So, and it worked out kind of. I had three players playing on Thursday night. They had two receivers on Tampa Bay and then Ezekiel Elliott on Dallas. And of course, I didn't figure Ezekiel Elliott would do much because it was against Tampa Bay, and their defense against the run is like amazing.
Now, I know the big game it seemed that everybody was kind of talking about was Dallas against the Buccaneers.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about it Thursday and everything because I wanted to watch it because of my wife, I'm actually a Dallas fan because of her.
Well,
so who won?
It went down to the wire.
Did it really?
Yeah, it was within 2 points.
Ooh.
Back and forth, and Dallas kicked the field goal to go
up
by two, and then right at the end, Tampa Bay scored. So it was like, it was like, but
it's a good game.
My two receivers, now, Ezekiel only got like 6 points, 5 points, something, 6 points on the day, which is really miserable. And I didn't think he'd do much more than that. But my two receivers on Tampa Bay both went for 30 points. So go figure. I got a good jump on everybody. Against who I was playing, which I think is I'm playing Mike this weekend. So it should be interesting. But so far, so good. So I enjoyed that. That was a highlight of my week. So
well, that's good.
Yeah,
that's good.
Getting high.
Well, that too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a good week. It was a good week.
Well, good, man. I'm glad. Yeah, I totally forgot about the game Friday or the game Thursday with Dallas and Tampa Bay, but
it was really a good game. It really was.
I wanted to watch it, and I totally forgot about it, and I was doing some other things or whatever. And I'm like, man. Okay, well, whatever. So.
Well, because everybody thought that Tampa Bay would come out and just roll right over Dallas, and Dallas went, oh, no. Dak Prescott, who had not even taken a snap for, like, I think it was 11 months or something, came out and was just really good. And so they almost won, and it had it, you know, there was miscues on both sides. So it was a good game. It was a really good game. Nobody.
I'm sorry I missed it though, man. So, well, for me, it was kind of a quiet week though. I was just kind of preparing for the show and everything, and then. But what I wanted to try and do was catch you up with something that we were talking. We've been kind of talking about it off and on, but I wanted to save certain things for you and everything because the Trini Lopez concert that I did last month and everything. And it was overall, the concert wasn't too bad. I mean, it came off really well. Some of the behind-the-scenes stories there or whatever was that we had Fleet, who we had on 2 weeks prior to the show and everything.
He's a hoot.
Dude, Fleet is amazing in person. He is so down to earth, so nice. Cool. And it was funny. On the way back from Vegas, though, we stopped at Barstow. And I said, you know, I got to get something to drink or I need some sugar in me to keep myself awake, you know. Mm. And who's in the 7-Eleven? Fleet and Lana. Yeah, they're both, they're both there. I'm like, what are you guys doing here? You know, I said, well, they'll let anybody into this 7-Eleven in Barstow. Yeah. You know, but no, I mean, he was so good. He actually did a couple more songs because my understanding, I guess Joe only wanted him to do three, and he actually did a few more, which was great because, you know, you don't hold your opening act to limiting, you know, in my opinion. So he did a great job. And of course, Fleet is known for standing on tables and everything. So it so happens my family got the table almost dead center of the room. So he kind of walked over to their table because he knew it was the center of the room itself and got on one of the empty chairs and stood on that. And then Karen is now clearing the table. So he can stand on
and he can get up on the table.
Yeah, and almost like a puppy, like, come on up, you can do it, come on. And then he goes, he's like, okay, and he does whatever on his big wooden table, you know. But such an entertainer, though. I mean, he does such a great job of really entertaining people, getting people involved in everything. And then he does something that I used to do years ago when I would perform here locally.
Fart in public?
Well, besides that. I mean, because I do it on the stage just for my drummer. So, because the fans were pointed towards him. So it was always nice. But no, is after the show, he went out and thanked all the people for coming to the show.
Oh, cool.
It wasn't his show, but he was the opener, you know. But I give him a lot of credit for that. And because he does that, he got a couple of new deals coming in for it. And one of them is for a film that they want him to do, kind of a thing.
All right.
So, which is great. So, so it was, he did just one hell of a job. And then Joe comes out and does his thing. And it was really kind of interesting because he passed out these red ribbons. No one knew why. No one really knew why at all. And he never told the audience what they were for.
Oops.
Yeah. So, and Lana and her, another gal, Sharon, came out and they were like waving them. And it's like, I'm sorry, but you don't force your audience to do something they really don't want to do. And if you do, then you better do it yourself and be the entertainer. So that way you're the example. You know, kind of a thing. So, but other than that, I mean, the show went off really, really well. The only problem I saw for Joe that I felt really bad for Joe was during the rehearsal. Because the sound guy set things up, but Joe was asking, well, hey, can I get a little bit of reverb? Can I get a little bit of this, you know, or maybe a little bit of delay? And the sound engineer was just kind of like, I'll do it tomorrow. Yeah, but we're rehearsing right now, man. We need it right now. Yeah. You know, tomorrow isn't going to do me any good. I want to know how much reverb to put in, you know, kind of a thing. And so he was just like, no, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. And then he left early and just kind of like left us there to finish the rehearsal without, you know, helping us without mixing or whatever or anything at all whatsoever. And I'm just like,
What?
Yeah. I was just like, okay. Well. All right. You know, and I guess what, if the sound stops, we put a quarter in or something, or, you know.
Please deposit 25 cents for the next 3 minutes.
Exactly. You know, and so I was just like, I felt bad for Joe, you know, on that whole thing. And then Joe had some video that he wanted to show, and we could hear it with no problem. But if anybody knows about those big, giant, like, Jumbotrons or whatever, okay, well, they had a small version of this. But when you work with those, they're divided into small squares, basically, okay? There's a device that then tells the computer that's sending the picture to the Jumbotron what part of the picture goes in what square. So that way, when we look at it, the audience, it looks normal. And not only that, though, but that it's correctly sized. Okay? So, and was that you?
Turn off your fucking phone.
Yeah. Tell him, Linda. Tell him.
Turn off your fucking phone.
Yes, and the tablet, too.
Oh, the tablet, too. Okay. So, anyway, so the sound engineer, the guy running the board and everything, and the lights and so, never corrected the ratio for the size of the screen.
Okay.
So there's some, so there was some video, because they were in different ratios or whatever, that where it was Joe and Trini, and you only saw like the tops of their head. You know, other parts you could see them, like, why do they look so far away, you know, kind of a thing. Other parts it was like, why do we just see Joe, or why do we just see Trini? You know, and okay, and who's that fourth person? Why were you just looking at them and we're hearing Joe and Trini? You know, and I just felt bad for Joe on that ass, because that just did not need to happen, you know. But the guy didn't do anything right, you know. But musically, it went over very, very well. He originally invited me to come up and do two songs with him, but I think because of the frustration that happened at the rehearsal, he kind of said, you know what, I'm just going to change the whole format. So there was another fellow there that was also came in to do a couple of songs. And he let him come up and sing La Bamba. And then he pulled him back up to do a second song that Trini actually recorded, that he wrote. So I thought that was kind of cool. And then he pulled me up. And so I told the story basically of how we got to know Trini here on the show, how we became friends with him behind the scenes of the show, and how he affected us during the interview and how he treated us during the interview. And then I went into the song Affection, written by our friend, my friend Ken Brown. And so, and got a lot of compliments out of it, basically. And so I was really happy. Got to meet some of Trini's family. Got to meet his oldest nephew and his youngest nephew, who's also named Trinidad. So they were they came up and they thought I did a good job at my song. They really enjoyed it. And then finally, I got to meet Orly, who is the gal that we originally spoke to in booking Trini. So and she wore this beautiful dress and everything and so forth. And she looked really, really pretty that night. And she said she was so happy that she was able to put us together and convinced Trini to come on our show. So, you know, and then I told in my speech, whatever, I told the audience, you know, about the envelope there that hangs, you know, now in the studio that Trini sent us. And I go, of course, I know Orly is the one who probably put the envelope together and everything, but, you know, and sent it off. But, you know, Trini was nice enough to send me a note and sign it and everything. So, but it was good. Overall, it was a good show and everything. And then at the end, Joe pulled everybody up and we kind of did a little bit of a jam session, If I Had a Hammer kind of thing. So it worked out. Cool. It worked out overall. And, you know, where the main room was and everything, you could say it was a packed house, you know, but where the bar was, it was a few people lingering here and there. But my favorite part, though, is where Fleet and I were downstairs. And there was a green room. And the thing was, I saw Fleet get into the elevator. And there's a green room story here. So Fleet, I get to in the elevator, and I'm going, oh, where are you going? He goes, he points downstairs. And I'm like, well, what's, like, I'm questioning him with my hands. Like, well, what's down there? And he signals me to come over. And I'm like, okay. So I get up from my seat and I walk over again to the elevator. I'm like, what the hell's downstairs? He goes, dude, there's a green room. I'm like, well, why didn't anybody tell me this? You know, I said, what, Joe's holding out on us or something or what? You know? So we go downstairs to the green room. And it's not really a green room. It was just another area, I think, to kind of hang out if we wanted to. But there was more construction going on down there that they had. And for those who kind of remember some of the stories I said prior, this venue was a combination between like a rock and roll place and a golfing venue, basically. You know, it had their nine holes or whatever. So, and also their what do you call it, where you're practicing your shots?
Putting green
driving
range?
Driving range is what it is. So they had that. So there's a bunch of like Callaway signs downstairs for golf and this and that or whatever. So we're going, okay, well, this is kind of cool. But there was a separate room there that had a glass thing kind of going around it. Oh, okay. Well, Fleet walks around to check it out a little bit more. The alarm now goes off.
Oh, good.
And it was loud. And Joe's upstairs singing his songs. And this time he's doing, like, I guess, like a medley of things on his acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can think about, oh, my God, it's in the middle of this show. and a crucial point for Joe. And I'm thinking, are people walking out or not? You know? So Flea goes upstairs, talks to the owner, and comes back down, and he goes, oh, it's going to shut off any moment right now. He no sooner says that, and it shuts off. And I said, okay, but could you hear anything? He goes, you can't hear anything upstairs at all. So thank God that it didn't affect the show, because that was my biggest thing, you know, was having it affect the show. So, but it's like, okay, whoosh, you know, we dodged a bullet there. So, but that was the show itself, so... So it was fun overall.
Sounds like fun.
We had a good time. We had a good time. Like I said, family and friends were there, so that was the nice thing about it overall. And they got the family that was there. That was the first time that they'd actually seen me perform too on a stage. So they got a big kick out of that. And then I think because I've opened up their eyes to that venue, they've been kind of going back a couple more times with some other friends of theirs to watch other bands play and stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because now they're posting like once a week. Like, hey, we went back to the Rockstar. Hey, we went back to this. So, which was kind of fun. So, but anyway, so there you go. So that's the whole thing, whatever. But I had to tell you the whole thing with Fleet and the alarm going on. So it was pretty cool.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. Hey, should we do our sponsor?
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, you know, things are starting to open up, and of course it seems that businesses everywhere will be needing some new signs.
Well, not just businesses, but how about bands needing new merchandise, companies needing canopies for conventions?
Well, where does one go for printing merchandise? Simple. Go where we go. Stranger Prints.
Stranger Prints is the official merchandise printer for Your Weekly Dose. They do all of our shirts we give away, and that's not all they do.
No, they do so much more, like table covers, canopies, graduation signs and banners, regular banners, stickers, slip mats for DJs, backdrops, sports jerseys, and more.
So for all of your printing needs for merchandise, go where we go, Stranger Prints.
Yep, go to StrangerPrints.com for more information and prices.
At StrangerPrints.com, tell them Your Weekly Dose sent you.
Because damn it, we did.
That's right, just now.
Just now, just go. Just leave!
Yeah.
Turn off the show, get going, get in your car, go to them.
The rest of the show you can listen to next week. So
exactly, Monday, listen to Monday.
Yeah, go get something printed.
Yeah. Oh, I love doing that commercial.
It's a real commercial.
It's a real commercial. Like, we get to do it. All right.
Pretty excited.
Yeah. And we're pretty much right on time, so this is kind of good. I like this. Today, God, it's... How do you begin today on where we were? Well, you know what? I think I'm gonna do it with starting off with this song, because this song just... one stroke of the pen, Alan Jackson solidified what everybody was going through and almost what everybody was feeling and the questions that we had in our minds of what was going on 20 years ago this morning. And so I'm just going to go ahead and play it. So here we go.
Turning on that September day, were you in the yard with your wife and children, or working on some stage in LA? Did you stand there in shock at the sight of that black smoke rising against that blue sky? Did you shout out in anger and fear for your neighbor, or did you just sit down and cry? Did you weep for the children who lost their dear loved ones, pray for the ones who don't know? Did you rejoice for the people who walked from the rubble and sob for the ones left below? Did you burst out with pride for the red, white, and blue, and the heroes who died just doing what they do? Did you look up to heaven for some kind of answer? Look at yourself and what really matters. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things he gave us, and the greatest is love. Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Teaching a class full of innocent children, or driving down some cold interstate? Did you feel guilty 'cause you're a survivor? In a crowded room, did you feel alone? Did you call up your mother and tell her you loved her? Did you dust off that Bible at home? Did you open your eyes and hope it never happened? Close your eyes and not go to sleep? Did you notice the sunset? First time in ages, speak to some stranger on the street. Did you lay down at night, think of tomorrow, go out and buy you a gun? Did you turn off that violent old movie you're watching and turn on I Love Lucy reruns? Did you go to a church and hold hands with some strangers, stand in line and give your own blood? Did you just stay home and cling tight to your family? Thank God you had somebody to love. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you the difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things he gave us, and the greatest is love. I'm just a singer of simple songs. I'm not a real political man. I watch CNN, but I'm not sure I can tell you difference in Iraq and Iran. But I know Jesus and I talk to God, and I remember this from when I was young. Faith, hope, and love are some good things he gave us, and the greatest is love. And the greatest is love. greatest is love. Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day?
Good morning, America. I'm Charles Gibson.
I'm Diane Sawyer, and it's Tuesday, September 11th, 2001.
It is lunchtime in London, 5 a.m. in Los Angeles, and 8 a.m. here in New York, live from the CNN Financial News headquarters.
It is beautiful outside, perfect September day with lots of sunshine. Oh, would you look at Washington, huh? I'm going outside today.
Other than that, it's kind of quiet around the country. We like quiet. It's quiet. It's too quiet.
Number two.
Yeah. This just in, you were looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center.
La espera de mayores informaciones, saber qué fue lo que ocurrió, cómo fue que este...
Apparently, a plane has crashed into the World Trade Center in New York.
It does not appear that there's any kind of an effort up there yet. Now remember, oh my God.
Oh my God.
That looks like a second plane.
I did not see a plane go in. That just exploded.
We just saw another plane coming in from the side.
You did. That was out of absolutely.
Yes, and that's
view.
The second explosion. You could see the plane come in just from the right-hand side of the screen. So this looks like it is some sort of a concerted effort to attack the World Trade Center that is underway.
They are running away very, very quickly. There are more explosions further down the building.
This is so shocking, of course, to everybody watching.
I've never seen anything like it. It literally blew itself into World Trade Center.
The building's exploding right now. You got people running up the street.
David, we're going to have to cut you off. President Bush is speaking.
Today, we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center in an apparent terrorist attack on our country.
And the Pentagon is being evacuated. There is a large fire there, and that is the smoke you see in the shot that you are looking at now.
It appears that an aircraft of some sort did hit the side of the Pentagon.
That's a very haunting description that Bob Kerr just gave of that low-flying aircraft near the White House, and one can only wonder if that was something that ultimately ended up in the Pentagon.
We just saw a live picture of what seemed to be a portion of the building falling away.
Wow.
And some people were...
Jamie, I need you to stop for a second. There has just been a huge explosion. We can see a billowing smoke rising. And I'll tell you that I can't see that second tower, but there was a cascade of sparks and fire, and now it looks almost like a mushroom cloud explosion.
Let's go to the Trade Tower again, because, John, we now have what do we have? We don't...
Wow. It looks like a new large plume of smoke.
Only one tower is standing. The other has collapsed.
Thanks very much. The whole side has collapsed?
The whole building has collapsed.
The whole building has collapsed?
The building has collapsed.
Heard a big bang, and then we saw smoke coming out, and everybody started running out, and we saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere, and people are jumping out the windows. Over there, they're jumping out the windows, I guess because they're trying to save themselves. I don't know.
And there's, you can see, perhaps the second tower, the front tower, the top portion of which is collapsing. Good Lord. There are no words.
There's a haze everywhere. It's very, very difficult to see, but there has been the whole area has been covered by soot and ash. But it looks almost like snow. So as people are coming up the street running from the scene of this new explosion.
所有飞往纽约和华盛顿的客机都已转飞加拿大的机场。
I'm going to interrupt you, Senator McCain. These are the first pictures we have in. This is from Somerset County, Pennsylvania. This is where the United Airlines flight, I believe it is 176, went down.
Hillary, I need to interrupt you. This is a Taliban spokesman talking now in Kabul, I believe.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward. And freedom will be defended.
قبل دقائق من افتتاح وول ستريت الذي انهار تماما بعد أن التهمته النيران. أول تعليق لمكتب التحقيقات الفيدرالي أشار إلى أن طائرة البوينغ اختطفت من مطار بوسطن.
That's how a lot of us woke up that day as the events began to unfold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just the whole time, and just suddenly out of nowhere, like the newscast before, they're like, oh, it's quiet today, you know, maybe a little too quiet. Yeah. And then wham, you know, everything changed, and it's never been the same.
No, it hasn't.
And so can't go back.
No. And it's you know, I remember just, you know, waking up that morning too, and Karen and I were in bed. The alarm went off for her to go to work. You know, she was teaching preschool, and I heard the radio go off, and of course Mark and Brian, we were listening to them, but then I heard Peter Jennings' voice out of the radio, going, what the hell is Peter Jennings doing on the radio? Why is... Well, it turned out that they had the ABC feed going in, you know. I guess the first plane had already hit by the time they were coming into work, and things started to go. And then while they were there the first half hour, they said the second plane went in. And I'm like, what? You know, but it was... I'm hearing Peter Jennings' voice from ABC, and that's when I turned on the TV going, what the heck are they talking about? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And I was just in awe of what happened, you know, and I just couldn't believe my eyes. I mean, it's something that you would see in a movie kind of a thing, but this was real life. Mm-hmm. Somebody took that initiative, you know, and, you know, we lost so many that day. You know, and we were talking about it last night. And, you know, a lot of people from the East Coast say that New York is the greatest city in the world. And I'm going to have to agree, because people from that area, they've gone through an awful lot.
Mm-hmm.
through the years. You know, whether it be hurricanes, storms, the World Trade Center has been attacked a few more times with bombings. You know, it really didn't matter. You know, we had the miracle landing on the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I don't care if you're from Queens, if you're from Brooklyn, Lower Manhattan, Upper Manhattan, it didn't matter. Or even if you were across the river from Jersey. One thing that we became that day and that night was we stopped calling ourselves Irish Americans, Mexican Americans, Afro Americans, Italian Americans. We called ourselves Americans.
Yeah, it was quite interesting in my life, the thing, since I'm as old as I am. I remember having to dive under my desk, you know, when I was in elementary school. Mm-hmm. To avoid the possible nuclear attack. So there's been a lot of stuff happen, and times when we've gotten together and times when we've been split apart, like the Vietnam War, how it started going, like, wait a minute, we're supposed to be united in this kind of situation, and we definitely weren't. And mm-hmm. It's just so many things, but this day, for some reason, it is the one time that I remember that something significant happened. We were attacked on our home soil, and I think because of that it... All the things I've been through, this is the one thing I remember the most. And I remember I got up just before the second my alarm went off, and I heard all the everything going on the radio, and it was just before the second tower collapsed. So I was able to turn the TV on because I heard what was going on. So I turned the TV on and found some news, and then it was like just a couple of minutes later, all of a sudden, I'm trying to realize that there was only one tower there.
Yeah.
You know, and that was by itself going, oh, my God, what the hell? And then the second one collapsed. And then, just devastation, people hurt, people just affected all over the world, pretty much. And I know the next day I was living in Long Beach, and we joined a bunch of people, and we walked up Ocean Avenue to the Long Beach World Trade Center that they have there and stuff, and kind of everybody was just together.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't anything but just unity, and it was a good feeling for that one time. I mean, it's unfortunate that it took something like that to make it happen, but it was obvious that it can happen, if just for a small time. It really can happen in this country where we come together.
Yeah.
And
well, I think that was the first time we've been attacked in that manner since the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the difference there is that, Pearl Harbor was a military hit, basically. Mm-hmm. The Japanese purposely went after those boats and those ships to cripple the Pacific Fleet, which they did an excellent job of doing. But where this was an attack on civilian life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just wanted to kill people, as many people as they could, and make a significant a point of it as possible. And so,
it's been hard. Going back and going through some of the footage and everything, I've been reliving a couple of different things, and I came across one story that I never heard before. And of course, it's 20 years later, and there are some still touching stories that we hear about firemen who were in the towers, came out, and then go back in to try and get more people out, and then they collapsed. There's a wonderful documentary too about this one particular fire department in New York that I think they lost almost like half of the men.
Yeah, they were right there.
At the station and everything. And, the guys were saying that they were getting tired of hearing names being read of who they thought they've lost and who did, they did lose. And they were tired of putting the flag at half staff because of it and everything. But here's one story that I thought was very intriguing. And this has to do with the Coast Guard asking for help to get people off of Manhattan Island on the backside, right where the towers were at.
Are you hearing something going like that?
And so I'm going to play that for you because I think you'll get another idea of how many people were there right at the epicenter of it overall. So let me play that for you. And this is just simply called the boat rescue.
U.S. Coast Guard, Ventura.
Yeah, Cap,
been a major explosion top of the World Trade Center. Looks like a plane hit it.
9/11 holds place in the history of New York City and of our nation as one of the great disasters. The Holland Tunnel was shut down. The path was flooded. The George Washington Bridge was shut down.
Two attacks there have been in Manhattan. One plane colliding with one Twin Tower 18 minutes later. Oh, my God.
The only way for people to go to New Jersey is via boat. The Coast Guard saw the Sea of Humanity in Battery Park, and so they went on the VHF and said, calling all boats.
All available boats, this is the United States Coast Guard. Anyone want to help with the evacuation of Lower Manhattan, report to Governor's Island.
I need as many life vests!
And all of a sudden, we started seeing sightseeing boats, catamarans, small boats, tender boats. The United States Coast Guard estimate the total people taken off of Manhattan was 500,000 people.
Women and children first!
Which makes it the largest marine evacuation in history. My name is Peter Johansson. I was the Senior Director of Ferry Operations for New York Waterway. I was the person in charge of operations on the day when 9/11 happened. If I look back at 9/11, it was just azure blue skies. It was perfect temperature. I was scheduled to have a meeting with the Coast Guard. I got on the 840 ferry. We started out into the river. You're looking straight at Manhattan in all its glory. There's the Empire State Building straight ahead of you. I was talking to the captain, and I just happened to look up over my left shoulder and saw the first plane go past me and go right into the building. And there was a jagged impression on the side of the building, like 45 degrees, that it went in. What was that? You know, was it navigation error? How could this happen? We saw out the other side smoke billowing. We docked at Pier 11. As everybody's walking off, there is paper fluttering down, and it was envelopes, and it was memos, whatever was on somebody's desk, because the wind was coming directly from the North Tower to where Pier 11 is. Whenever anything happened around the World Trade Center, we knew that people, if they couldn't go to the PATH system, they would come to us. And so I got on the phone and basically said, we're going to need to start sending more ferries down to the World Trade Center. At that time, our ferry fleet was about 24 boats. We were carrying about 33,000 passengers a day. We went right to the ferry terminal at the World Trade Center. The whole barge is filled with people. We can carry 150 people on our boat, and I stayed there. I went up to the top of the ramp and started doing crowd control. It was only about 5 minutes, about 9:03. I watch as another plane circles around the Statue of Liberty and heads right for the South Tower and the fireball as it strikes the tower. That changed everything.
That is it.
This is terrorist.
You're not going to have two accidents at the same time. We're under attack. I have to stick with what I need to do, and that's the safety of people and getting them out of there. If anybody showed up that was injured in any way, we made sure we got them to medical attention. If anybody showed up and they were covered in debris, they set up a system on the other side where they would hose them down, decontaminate them. People lined up to get on those boats, and the lines stretched northward and southward for about 20 blocks. So we continued the evacuation until the first building came down. You heard this rumble and you felt the shaking. All of a sudden, this cloud goes past us. I remember putting some cloth over my mouth and just running. At this point, they've just shut down all traffic in and out of the city, so the only way for people to go to New Jersey is via boat. The Coast Guard saw the Sea of Humanity in Battery Park clamoring to get out of there, and so they went on the VHF and said, calling all boats.
All available boats, this is the United States Coast Guard. Anyone want to help with the evacuation of Lower Manhattan, report to Governor's Island.
And this was the first time that they had ever done that, to put out a plea and say, if you can respond as a mariner, can you come down here and rescue people? And all of a sudden, the tugboats that are in Staten Island tied up, the fishing boats that are in Sheepshead Bay or on the Jersey Shore, took their lines off and headed that way. We started seeing sightseeing boats, catamarans, small boats, tender boats. And you know what? We were thrilled to have them.
Okay, so if you want to keep coming down,
we got more room.
Watch your step.
The Coast Guard had people on the ground there at Battery Park telling them, you can take 50 people, you can take 75 people. And then they would direct them where they're going to go.
I can't believe it, man. I'm fucking numb. I can't believe it. He's got a boatload again.
Every boat was completely full every run. People were waiting 3 or 4 hours to get on a boat, and they were happy to do it. They just kept saying thank you. As the day went on, there was some interesting rescues that our people did. There was a guy who strapped soda bottles to his body and tried to swim across the Hudson. And our guys picked him out of the water. And it was just like, you're crazy. A boat would pull in, load up 400 people, would pull away, go straight across, would discharge those people, and just coming back and forth. And we really kept that pace through the night, even into the wee hours. The United States Coast Guard, when they look back at the boat lift that occurred on 9/11, they estimate the total people taken off of Manhattan was 500,000 people, which makes it the largest Marine evacuation in history. Sometime after midnight, I got in my car and I had this urge to go home. Probably got home at about 2:30 in the morning. And I went and I kissed each of my children. They were all sleeping, but my wife had been waiting up for me. She had been a nervous wreck the whole day. She appreciated the fact that I came home. I think of the notices that people posted for their loved ones. It was heart-wrenching, just because you knew that most of those people were never coming back. And some of these people you recognized because you saw them on the ferries all the time. My neighbor, two doors down, was at the top of the North Tower, and he lost his life, and we lost a number of people from my town. It was also very personal. I always considered myself a very healthy person. 2014, turned out I had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 4. It's one of those cancers that are very common amongst people who were exposed to 9/11.
Building debris is covered in asbestos.
We've had a number of people who worked for New York Waterway who were in that zone for a long time who have passed away. It's a sad reality. I'm just very fortunate. I am in remission for 7 years now. I pride myself on being a native New Yorker. My parents grew up in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and they moved the family out in Long Island, which is where I grew up. And it gladdened my heart when I saw the response of New Yorkers to how they helped each other post 9/11. Nobody wanted to have this sense of defeatism. The sooner that we opened things up, people felt good about that. The city never ceases to amaze me how it reinvents itself. It's not surprising to see the success of the boat lift, because throughout your mariner career, you are trained over and over again to respond to emergencies. We had a little saying at the school I went to, if somebody yelled one hand, everybody came running. Basically, one hand for the ship, but one hand for everybody to help.
Yes, Cap, you need any help evacuating the people from Manhattan? We're right off 7 miles out. We're a tugboat.
U.S. Coast Guard, it's a pleasure. Vessel stranded off Manhattan. If you need our assistance, we can come in and pick up people.
Yes, sir, this is a private yacht, Avante. Would you like us to try to evacuate anybody off the North Seawall of us?
I'm very proud of the fact that I was in charge of an operation that evacuated between 200 and 220,000 people from Manhattan that day. The fact that I was there is important, but there's a lot of people that were there with me. And the crews of our boats, they were heroes. And I would just like to recognize them for all that they did that day. 9/11, I was there. And if I have to take away something from my experience, is that the world can change in an instant. Be ready to respond and to have a positive impact.
You did okay? It's an incredible story, though.
Yeah, just one of those things where you, you know, when Kennedy was shot, I was only like, I think I was 13, or just turned 14, something like that.
And, how did that affect?
Pretty young.
How did that affect you at that age, though?
I was sad, but then, you know, obviously because I was just a teenager, it was like, well, yeah, You know, it affects you, but, you know, you don't have the depth for it to go into that you do when you're adult. You're, you know, you're a different person when you're an adult, and you things right. affect you stronger. Things affect you in different ways that when you're a teenager, it's like, you know, it's sad and you feel it. It's not like it doesn't affect you. But I think being a teenager, it was like, well, okay, you know. There was still the Beatles and things like that. So, you know, it was...
Well, they helped save us, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, but, you know, this was just watching an obvious situation where thousands of people are being killed right before your eyes.
Yeah.
That will always affect everybody who watched it.
Absolutely. I thought that story was amazing because I didn't realize... Because all you see is the footage of people running.
Yeah.
You know.
In the town, in Manhattan.
In Manhattan, know. Yeah. In that
you
part and everything.
Realize what was going on in the water.
Elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, in the city. So when I came across that story, I'm like, I got to play that. That is just.
Yeah, that's really cool.
You know, and to for them to get 500,000 people off of Manhattan, that's a lot.
Wow.
You know, and they just kept going and going and did not stop and became this whole, you know, chain thing. Overall,
you think about it, you know, the people that were there and it's happening, the constant wonder of, you know, when's that next plane coming? You know, realizing that, well, there could be more.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they were trying to get people off there. But it was it's like having that fear, that stress, mm-hmm. if you will. Throughout the time this happened, and being able to just continue to do what you have to do.
Okay. So, yeah, it's one of those things that, I mean, yeah, where you're witnessing the deaths of these people, and you feel so bad for the system. Like I said, you know, earlier, you know, New York, I think, is the greatest city on this earth because. That city has suffered so much, but the citizens of that city are resentful. They come back at you.
Oh, yeah.
And when they come back at you, they come back at you hard. It's like a gang. You know, it's like you mess with one of us, you're going to mess with the whole family kind of a thing, yeah. You know. We have a friend of ours sitting in the room today with us, and you're actually from New Jersey.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
So, so welcome Casey Summer. Casey, you're from there. How old were you when 9/11 happened?
Yeah, I was in sixth grade. I actually remember it very vividly. I was in the middle of German class when she interrupted our class, and we had the entire school turn on the television, so we were able to follow on what was going on. And pretty sure soon after we were given notice of what was going on, we closed for the day. I mean, there was just no learning to be had at that point. Parents were coming to pick up their children.
Yeah.
And it was just a slow evacuation of our area as well. I mean, I'm an hour away from the towers in downtown New York, yeah. where I grew up. And we just didn't know what was going on. We didn't know how extensive it was going to be. We didn't know if it was going to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was young. I didn't understand much about it at the time. And now, kind of looking back at it 20 years later, it's incredible. It is absolutely amazing, like what Steve said, the difference between your perspective as a child taking in a tragedy like this.
How old were you again?
I was in sixth grade. So what's that, 12 or?
Six? Or, yeah, somewhere around
yeah,
there.
Yeah, 11 or 12 11 right or 12. Around there.
God, jeez, oh. That is young to take that in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, yeah, and I knew that I felt the pain that my parents were going through, you know, but I didn't really feel it like that. Not like what I do today,
right,
watching a video like this boat rescue.
Right.
You know, and where now I'm old enough now that I've lost my own friends throughout my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I understand what that grief is like. And if you haven't lost somebody, you just can't imagine what that grief is. Mm-hmm. Even though these were strangers, I ended up not knowing anybody personally that was affected.
I was going to ask, did you lose anybody?
Not anybody personally, no. Okay. But there were families in my classroom
that lost people
that had lost members of their own family that were there that day. So, you know, it was not unusual for people to commute from my area into the New York City.
Right. Well, that's what you did. I mean, that was the job or whatever, you know, and of course, working at the Trade Center was such a wonderful thing. One story that a lot of people don't know, and my son read the biography on Jermaine Jackson from the Jackson 5, you know, and apparently Michael was supposed to be in one of the towers that day for a meeting. And Michael being Michael woke up extremely late, like 11 o'clock in the meeting, was supposed to be at around 8 o'clock in the morning kind of a thing. And Michael didn't wake up till like 10 or 11. So everything had pretty much kind of had already happened, you know, when he woke up. But can you imagine if we found out that we lost Michael Jackson in that tragedy?
And there are so many other examples like that as well. In fact, that was one of the things that I really focused on. I found a lot of kind of solace with myself in those, was listening to the stories of people who were supposed to be there and weren't for one reason or another. Mm-hmm. Some people stuck in traffic. Some people, you know, decided to take a phone call before they'd left the house. Some people turned back around just because their children were upset and it took them a little longer to get them dropped off and settled at school before they were able to make their travels. It's amazing how much looking back at that moment, and you can appreciate the inconveniences that occurred throughout your day that caused you to be delayed.
Yeah.
And just amazing to show you where, what can happen and where you're supposed to be and when you're supposed to be there.
Yeah. I remember hearing some of those stories too, or where someone changed the flight, you know, to another flight instead, whether it was coming back to LA or something, you know, they had to stay one more day for a meeting or something, so they had to change their flight plans. You know, where I've heard where some acquaintances of ours were, the husband was had a meeting and the meeting got canceled at the tower. So, and you know, he said, okay, well, I guess I'll go back to my hotel room. And that's what he did. And then by that time, you know, it was the first plane hit or whatever. And it's just amazing on those stories you hear, you know, let alone the heroes of that day, you know, that still amaze me. And to me, that's where I say that the citizens, you know, as well as the firefighters, the first responders, the police, a lot of them gave their lives, you know, willingly gave their lives, knowing what the possible outcome might be. You know, but I think a lot of them didn't know whether or not the buildings would actually crumble, you know, because the way it was supposed to be built, you know, but just the heat and from the fires and the jet fuel just melted and bent those, you know, iron girders that it couldn't support it anymore, you know, and then just, unfortunately, just pancaked both of those buildings.
Well, and unfortunately, we just saw something very similar to that happen down in Florida. They had an apartment condo collapse in kind of a similar manner, the building looked completely fine one moment, and then the next thing you know, it just started to cave in from one side and then just pancaked down.
Yeah.
It was absolutely unreal, but just another example to show how, if you know, if a particular thing is affected within the structure of the building, how much different that can affect the way the building will then react.
Right. Yeah. So true. So true.
And who could have predicted that?
Exactly.
In any of the construction.
Yeah, and you can't.
Not a contingency plan.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Especially
it might be now.
Yeah, knowing, considering what they're doing, you know, well, it's like with us here in Los Angeles, you know, with the earthquakes and everything, you know, we've had quite a few major earthquakes here where buildings just fell to the ground, you know. Obviously, brick buildings don't work here in L.A. or San Francisco for that matter, you know. So we had to learn to make sure that our tall towers in downtown L.A., can stand or withstand a certain magnitude of earthquake, you know, and I don't want to test it right now or anything, you know.
Right.
And Lord knows we are way overdue on a massive one from San Andreas. But, you know, we've had some big ones since then. And, you know, it was scary, you know, but knowing that these are, these buildings are what's the word I'm looking for? Retrofitted, I guess, basically. Kind of a thing. Then you kind of go, oh, okay, all right, I guess I'll just stay here, you know, and where some people have been in those buildings where we've had a big one, and yeah, it just sways back and forth because of the way it's built and so forth and what have you.
So Chicago is a city that has unbelievably amazing architecture, and one of the things that I found really interesting when I took some of the little architecture tours that they have throughout the city is that the buildings are designed to withstand the winds, and they are actually able to bow and flex based on the winds that are coming through and ripping through that area.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable. Combine that with the floating foundations that they're on. Mm-hmm. It's just...
Well, that's the way the Twin Towers were kind of originally built, too. I mean, they were designed to withstand a plane going into them because it was right around World War II where some type of bomber during World War II went into the Empire State Building. And that was the last time that had ever happened. That was the only time that ever happened in New York. And so now, you know, flash forward, you know, what, 20 some years or whatever for at that point. So now you're looking at late 60s, early 70s, which is when the towers were built and completed. So they wanted to make sure that would never happen again and it would withstand it. And so, you know, to a degree, yeah, they took the brunt of the force. The plane didn't go through the building. It stopped it. You know,
you're not wrong.
And you know, and you're talking about a plane that's going 500 miles an hour in air. So they did their job. You know, what we couldn't foresee was the heat and everything, and that the heat would reduce the metal and bow the metal. You know, that's one thing we could never foresee on that, though. You know, but they did do their job as far as that's concerned. You know, but you know, anybody from the East Coast, you know, especially New York, New Jersey, whatever, I bow down to them because, like I said earlier, they are the most resilient people I've ever known. And they come back and they keep coming back and they keep coming back. And I praise them for that because that's just the attitude of people from that area. You know, they don't take shit. They're, you know, you can hit us, you can knock us down. That's fine. But we're going to come back at you, you know, and when we come back, we're going to come back stronger. No matter how long it takes. And even though it still hurts since 20 years later, but New York has survived. It really has, you know, and I applaud them for that.
And flourished, and would some would even argue even grew better.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I know with us here in Southern California, going back to the earthquakes, there's been some areas where that has happened. The last one that... where it really affected myself and my family was the October 1st earthquake in 1987. And we know that one here locally as the Whittier Narrows earthquake, which was like a 5.9. And we were at, and where I was at, my high school was pretty much where the epicenter was at. And so we really felt that. And it shut down our uptown area, which looks like downtown, but they call it uptown because it's up on a hill kind of a thing on an incline. And, I mean, yeah, buildings came down. Buildings were separated. The back wall. My father's office was in the back of what they call the Elias Building. And the wall was actually separated from his floor. And I could literally look out and down to the alley. And, you know, and I'm going, okay, well, I better not stand too close because it might collapse. I don't know. I'm not too sure or whatever because it was a brick building. And so we had to pull all the stuff out of my dad's office and bring it home and everything. So, but like you said, that area of Whittier reflourished. It tore down, I think, some of what we would consider eyesores. For example, if there was the old Pussycat theaters that showed adult films, there was one there, and it crumbled to the ground, basically, and the earthquake just shut it down. But now they, but since then, they revitalized it and turned it into a regular, you know, theater now. So that was a good thing that came out of it.
No curtains separating the two rooms?
No, no curtains separating the two rooms. Yeah, there's no pride. It's like, hey, extra $5, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
It's an enterprise they're missing out on.
It's true. You make some more money. Come on. You know, nothing bad about that. Even for the live shows, you never know. You know, but it turned it back into a flourishing, quote unquote, downtown area where burger joints came back and clubs came. And there was an old bank that turned into a discotheque, kind of a thing. More restaurants started to come in, and not just came in, but some of my classmates invested in that area and own some of the stores or some of the restaurants or whatever. You know, so. It was really cool to see that, and it still flourishes to this day, and it's, you know, 35 plus years later after the earthquake. So you're right. Sometimes it takes a tragedy of this nature to make something a little bit better, but I would not want that type of a day to ever be repeated again, though. Never. You know, we lost way too many people, you know, on this. So... But thank you for your input, though. I mean, God, 12, sixth grade, and you guys are watching this.
I know. Yeah, it was a lot. We didn't even really understand much of what we were looking at. Our poor teacher was having to take the time to explain to us why this was important.
Yeah. You were literally watching history happen as it goes. Yeah, because, God, I was, 31 when it happened. So you were... Sixth grade. God, I feel old now. Gee, many crickets.
You are old.
Well, now I'm 51. Yeah, it's 20 years later.
51.
Oh.
What a nightmare your life must
be. Yeah, it is. It is. It's a horrible nightmare. Oh, well, you know, that's enough on reminiscing on that. I mean, you know, the world has never been the same since. Going to airports has never been the same. You know, I don't know if we say thank God for the TSA or not or whatever, but
gee, yeah, I had to take off my shoes and my belt and everything out of my pocket. And
I saw an article yesterday that where this, I think, woman got fed up with the TSA because I guess she traveled or whatever. I just caught a glimpse of it. But basically, she wore a bikini going in with her suitcase and her cell phone or whatever, and that was it. She goes, I got nothing. You want to check me? Really? Go ahead. You know, because I ain't carrying nothing on me. But yeah, I just walked in her bikini. I felt bad. Like, it's kind of smart, actually, but at the same token, I felt bad, you know. Yeah, it's changed so much. I mean, because so many things, I mean, the country just shut down. You know, for the next month, basically, the next few months, you know, Disneyland shut down, Knott's Berry Farm shut down, and it took a while for it for them to reopen and everything. And I remember it wasn't too long after that I got laid off from my job because things just stopped. Everything just stopped, you know, for a moment. You know, but we recovered. We recovered from it, and it's 20 years later. Main thing is never forget. Never forget what happened 20 years ago. And we pray that it'll never happen again. And so far, I think we've kind of done that because FBI, CIA, and other government officials and law enforcement have stopped other plots from happening.
Yes.
That would have been just as disastrous. So thank them for doing what they've done to stop that, though. But we're going to switch it up a little bit before we end the show, and that way we kind of laugh at certain things here and there. So we got some things that make you think. Things that make you think. You better think about what you're trying to do to me. Let your mind run, let yourself be free. Oh, freedom. if tomato is a fruit, then isn't ketchup technically a smoothie? Just saying. Just saying. Casey, what do you think?
I think you're missing a couple other key ingredients to make a smoothie, though.
Well, it's got it's different ingredients, though. But yeah, you know, it could be considered a smoothie.
It is smooth.
That's true. It is.
Well, then, if you ate pasta and antipasta, would you still be hungry?
If a family of black sheep get a white sheep, is the white sheep the black sheep of the family?
If a pregnant woman goes swimming, does she become a human submarine?
Dive, dive.
The baby can tell. Dive. The pressure increases or something. Kid's going, ooh, I'm underwater.
Twice. Are people who manufacture tabletops counterproductive?
If you try to fail and succeed, which have you done?
All right, okay. Do you ever just look at somebody and wonder how they moan during sex? Yes. Yeah. Yes, I did. Yes, I'm doing that right now.
Okay, if you were not meant to have midnight snacks, why is there a light in the refrigerator?
That's a good point. I like that one. Now, if you're clean when you get out of the shower, then how do towels get dirty?
As kids, we played head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Is the adult version wallet, glasses, keys, and phone?
Are you at that stage yet, Casey?
Yeah.
Why are hemorrhoids called hemorrhoids instead of asteroids? That makes sense.
If I melt dry ice, can I take a bath without getting wet?
When your pet bird sees you reading the newspaper, does he wonder why you're just sitting there staring at the carpet?
That, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. If a word in the dictionary were misspelled, how would we know?
See, I told you there's six S's in Mississippi. Because Lord knows you spell the river and the state differently.
That's right.
Yeah. If love is blind, why is lingerie so popular? Casey?
I don't know. I guess it's a sensory overload.
Something going on there, yeah.
Sense me away.
Yeah. They tend to be nice fabrics, you know? Lace, silk.
Yeah.
Hey. If the pen is mightier than the sword and a picture is worth a thousand words, how dangerous is a fax?
That makes me go,
Exactly. Because sometimes you're sending pictures. Sometimes you're not.
Sometimes you feel like a fax.
Sometimes I don't.
We had, back in 1979, at our computer company, we had a fax out in the hallway.
Uh-huh.
And it just sat there. And somebody would send a fax, and you'd see it start, and it would, and it's starting to be, dun. It would take, like, anywhere from 12 to 20 minutes to get a, like a regular piece of paper like this,
right,
out of the fax. It would take, yeah.
I remember there's a scene in the movie Almost Famous, mm-hmm, where the kid calls in to Rolling Stone magazine, and they go, okay, we need to send you, you need to send us all the notes that you have or whatever. He goes, you need to go down to this newspaper place or whatever. They have something called the Mojo. And what it does, it transmits pieces of paper over the telephone lines. He goes, it transmits it like within an hour. So send us all your notes or whatever.
Oh, my God.
But can you imagine that? That's how slow the original fax was.
Oh, yeah. It was pretty amazing. I guess, you know, back then it was just a matter that it did it.
Yeah.
That was, and people are like, ooh.
Like, that's a miracle. It's like popcorn's a miracle. What are you talking about?
Popcorn is a miracle.
It is. Absolutely. The popcorn I had last night tasted miraculous.
So. Oh, man. All right. Should we do what's news?
Okay, why not?
All right.
Wait a minute.
What's news? Oh,
too late.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's news, pussycat?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Pussycat, pussycat.
All right.
I love you.
What you got, Steve?
Okay. A Kentucky woman walked up to a random family on Friday and threw their 5-year-old boy in the Ohio River.
What?
That's right.
God.
The woman, she claimed immunity because it was in international waters.
The Ohio River.
And the Ohio
River is international waters.
Now, she also jumped in,
uh-huh,
and then told the cops that they couldn't do anything because it was international waters. And they said, okay. And charged her with kidnapping and assault. Oh, by the way, the boy was not hurt.
Yeah, that's good.
He was probably a little confused and wet, but going to be the first time that happens.
Oh, man. Yeah, you think that the Ohio River is international waters? No, well, that's good. That's more like...
How about new, you crazy Dutch bastard?
Pretty simplistic is that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, growing up, Steve.
I never did that.
We're not talking about maturing. We're just, you know, physically growing
that's
up.
It's just as I got older.
Yeah, as you got older. Your parents told you that if you ever needed help with something, to call an officer, right?
Find somebody that looks official.
Well, that's what this Florida woman did here. Basically, she gave the meth she bought to the cops last week because she said, quote, it was junk. And so basically she was arrested for felony possession of a controlled substance. According to the police reports, the woman had just purchased $20 worth of the drugs, and approaching the deputy, she said she would like to turn it over to police because it was junk. And, yeah, so she was booked into the local jail but bonded out, so, yeah. You know, it's like, I don't know if you're going to, you know.
Well, you know, officer, I have a problem, you know, makes sense.
Yeah, you know, and that's what she thought, you know, that's what she was raised to do is call the cops when you got a problem. Well, the meth is junk.
Yeah.
I'm going to call the cops. Call the popo.
I bought this and I smoked half of it and it's junk.
It's junk. Yeah.
So I'm going to turn it into you guys.
Yeah. Come and get it and get me. and then I'm going to throw a kid in the Ohio River called International Waters.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's false advertising, isn't it?
Mm, Yeah.
Depends. I mean, I've had crappy hamburgers. You know? And they never said that it was the world's greatest hamburger in the world, but, you know, hamburgers were junk, but I still ate it.
Are you trying to say you get what you pay for?
Yeah, $20. I wouldn't have gotten $20. I would at least, you know, $40. Not that I'm a drug meth user. I don't know about those things.
Is that expensive for meth? I don't know what the going rate is currently.
Steve?
What
you got next, man?
Okay. I fear for the youth of this country. A 23-year-old woman in Orlando was arrested for stealing armfuls of clothes from a Tommy Hilfiger store. Ramaya Johnson and a female accomplice fled through an emergency exit of Tommy Hilfiger store with tons of clothing and hopped into a waiting getaway vehicle. Well, fortunately, the cops were able to track down the vehicle used to get away and found Johnson and the accomplice and bags full of Tommy Hilfiger merchandise. And here's the kicker. They all still had all the tags and any theft devices attached. Oh, Jesus. And she was even wearing one of the Hilfiger shirts with the tag still on it. And she was...
It's
arrested.
An accessory.
Yeah,
it's a notion.
It's a new. It's a whole new take on the term accessory to crime. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a notion is what it is.
Oh my goodness.
Have you ever wanted to get a tattoo?
I think not particularly. When I was playing basketball in college, if somebody had said, hey, let's all get a tattoo of a cougar or something, mm-hmm. you know, because we were the Quest of Cougars.
Right.
I would have done it. Mm-hmm. But I've never sought out getting one.
Okay. All right. So, and, of course, I see Casey has two wonderful tattoos.
She's got some ink.
Yeah.
I know. More than two.
Yeah. And I like them because of what they are. I don't know if you recognize them or not, but it's from the Rescuers.
Yes.
Yeah, the dragonfly. That was a little speedboat or whatever.
Evinrude.
Yeah. So I dig it. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool. Okay. But here's one thing I wouldn't do, because this guy in Illinois did it, though. He had a warrant out for forgery. He tried to give the cops a fake name. And, of course, when they caught him on Friday, but see, his name was tattooed on his neck. Which kind of blew his plan up a little bit there and kind of got arrested.
Yeah, my name is Bob. Well, then who's Tony?
Exactly. Exactly. He's my lover. And boy, I'm missing his love right now.
Oh, man. Who's tattooing their own name on their body?
That's what they did. And I mean, I've known people to like... tattoo like their social security number or maybe like a job ID number, you know, kind of a thing. Seriously, I've seen people do that. And but your own name,
yeah,
you know, and hi. I would think it would also have to be backwards so you can read it in the mirror. You know,
it's a whole new
just
thing
in case you forget the real one,
right? Yeah. You know, you forget who you are, so you look in the mirror, I'm Samuel. Okay, cool. You know, but
they could have done that in Phoenix Furs. Hi, I'm Norm. And he could have had Norm on his forehead. That would have been funny.
Or his brother could have been Abby.
Abby.
Abby Normal.
Abby something.
Abby Normal.
Normal. Abby Normal.
Yeah. You're missing that quote, aren't you?
Yes.
Young Frankenstein.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So there you go, guys. So that's what's news.
What's news, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's news, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa.
All right. Well, you know what? It is that time, and I'll be honest, I'm not going to play the theme song that we actually had today. I'm going to play the Bon Jovi one because that's more rocking.
Yeah, it's better.
That's better for us. So, and once again, guys, don't forget, you can pick up all the music on our main sponsor, which is Amazon. So, in the meantime, the show's website is yourweeklydose.com. Facebook page is Your Weekly Dose. Twitter and Instagram, find us at Your Weekly Dose 1.
You thank me, Steve. Facebook, Steve Silva, and Twitter at SilvaLining69.
And for all social media, you can find me simply at Sean R. Unplugged. That's for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And don't forget, guys, you can listen to us on Delmarva Talk Radio. These are all of our past shows, 7 a.m. Wednesday through Friday mornings, and also online City Radio at noon Wednesday through Friday. And don't forget to tell your friends about us, because we can't grow without you.
Please find some common ground there, world.
Yeah, help us spread the word about the show and tell your friends, your relatives, people you know, PTA, the YMCA. Tell people you haven't talked to in years, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah, there it is. Yeah, tell people you haven't talked to in years. Oh, wait, you just said that. Yeah, well, tell them. We dare you.
Good cover. Good cover.
Thank you.
Good job. Yeah. Well-oiled machine.
I'm nothing if... all well prepared.
All righty, guys. Well, go out and have a wonderful day today. We're sure there's a lot of memorials going on. If you feel like attending one, please do, because we did lose a lot of people 20 years ago. And God bless them all. And until then, guys, we'll see you next week. Take care. Be good to each other.
Yeah, try to be nice.
Listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.